Hi, I'm Aislinn Antrim with Pharmacy Times, and you're listening to the very first episode of Pharmacy Focus Oncology Edition, where we break down the latest news in the oncology pharmacy space. Each month, we'll speak with experts in the field to bring you updates on the latest news, research, and treatments in oncology. This month, I spoke with Ron Lanton, principal at Lanton Law, to get an overview of Biden's Cancer Moonshot program and what it could mean for the future of cancer treatment in the United States. So, Ron, President Biden's Cancer Moonshot program aims to, quote, end cancer as we know it today, end quote. That's a big statement, but what is your understanding of this program and its goals?
Well, I thought it was interesting, the Cancer Moonshot program, when it was brought back. And I say brought back because we first saw this in 2016. So during the State of the Union address, when President Obama was president, this was right after Vice President Biden had lost his son, Beau. And everybody was wondering, oh my gosh, is he going to run, you know, for president? You know, what's he going to do? And then, we soon after found out that he wasn't. But one of the things that was kind of like a transition for the vice president to do, and to get something that was very near and dear to his heart, was to establish this program, call it the Cancer Moonshot. And this is because, again, he lost his son, Beau, to cancer. So he wanted to have this moonshot, in quotes, effort, meaning, you know, this is something that seems impossible right now. But, you know, if we put a bunch of resources, just like we put somebody on the moon, you know, we can definitely try to get something done to end cancer, which is the ultimate goal. So the official name of the program, Cancer Moonshot, is the National Immunotherapy Coalition. And it was interesting in 2016 because this was towards the end of the Obama administration. So there wasn't a lot of time in order to really get this established as something that was like official for the United States government. When they did start it though, the organization's goal was to have cancer be a chronic disease. And the National Cancer Institute, or NCI is what most people call it, became the actual overseer of the Cancer Moonshot goals and the program itself. So back in 2016, the efforts in that area were to match federal funds with data sharing mechanisms so that investigators can use that information to share therapies and information about therapies for patients that were battling a lot of different types of cancers. And what the coalition did was that they wanted to accelerate the potential found in a lot of combination immunotherapies. So we're seeing that now, as not as much as we want to see on payer formularies about how these things get paid. I think this is still like in the introductory phase. All these things were kind of going in the direction of getting resolved and talked about, and then we had COVID. So we kind of put everything on pause. But now these things are starting to come back. So compare now to what I just said from everything that was happening in 2016. Now we're fast forward to 2022. We just had the State of the Union, which, you know, a lot of people may or may not have watched, but there's always something in healthcare, no matter what's going on. They are going to mention something about healthcare. And in this case, it kind of surprised me because he mentioned that the Cancer Moonshot was coming back. So if you go to the whitehouse.gov and you look at Cancer Moonshot, you'll see now it's kind of it's more of a vision right now, because they were doing a few things in 2021 to just kind of lead up to the announcement of this program, but it's more of a recommitment because he's been working on this since 16, hasn't really been in the public limelight, but now it's come back. So he's like, this is a reaffirmation of my commitment to this program. So when you look at the program itself, there's a new national goal to reduce the death rate by cancer over 50% through the next 25 years. They want to build a White House Cancer Roundtable conversation series. They also want to host a White House Cancer Moonshot Summit. The panel, the President's Cancer Panel, did release a report called Closing Gaps in Cancer Screening. So that's a really interesting read, just kind of a recap of what's going on with different types of cancers and costs and things like that. They've also issued a call to action on cancer screening and early detection. And lastly, in the president's first budget, which he just put out, he sustained funding for the biomedical and health research with increased funding for NIH and the NCI, which we had just talked about, as well as full funding for the 21st Century Cures Act. and the Beau Biden Cancer Moonshot Initiative at NCI. So that's kind of like, a really long-winded compare and contrast. So, from where the program started to where we are right now.
Researchers have been working for decades to reduce cancer rates and find cures. So how does this moonshot program approach this differently?
I think with this recent surprise announcement, it might be a little too early to know how it is different because he just announced this, put his vision out saying, I'm reaffirming money to this. I'm reaffirming an effort to this. So he's got a cabinet position that's tackling this problem. I don't think right now this is going to overtake anything that's been happening for decades in the private sector with research and different collaboratives that have been going on. I think that's just going to accent things. It'll maybe give it more funding if we have more promising things in immunotherapy or precision medicine or things like that. So I think we just have to come back and wait to see what happens.
What is pharmacists' role both in this program and in oncology more broadly?
I don't think if it's, I mean, obviously with cancer, there's a lot of other ancillary services that people have to watch out for. But I think the pharmacist's goal overall remains the same, whether it's diabetes or cancer or whatnot. When you were talking about just like oncology pharmacist, anything from chemotherapy dose preparation to maybe some safety checks, educating patients about the side effects of chemotherapy and what happens, educating patients about drug development research is something that a pharmacist would do. Being that touch point for the patient and the caregiver about interactions with other medications that the cancer medication may or may not have. I think also being a reference for patient assistance services, patient medication assistance services, because these medicines aren't cheap. And trying to figure out a way to make sure that the patient is able to access it and be adherent to the regimen. Because if you're not, then worse things happen. Then, of course, the patient's back in the hospital, and that's just something we don't want to see for the patient outcome, but also for just the cost of the system. It just doesn't do anybody any good. So definitely a pharmacist is there, the frontline resource for a patient to use. And like I said, whether it's cancer or not, I kind of have a hard time differentiating because those services are needed and very much the same throughout. But like I said, because you're dealing with something that's a little bit more specialized, the ancillary services may be different, but the overall skills remain the same.
Have you listened to the array of other podcasts from Pharmacy Focus? We have content for every specialty, including retail pharmacists, technicians, students, and more. In the latest episode of Pharmacy Focus, host Jill Murphy spoke with Christina Madison and Hillary Blackburn live at the American Pharmacists Association annual meeting. Check out our full list of podcasts at pharmacytimes.com. Some of the key approaches to the Moonshot program include lowering healthcare costs, strengthening preventive efforts, and encouraging research efforts. Legislators have been talking about lowering healthcare costs for decades. So, what is your impression of where that stands, and what are they currently doing to this end?
I don't think this really has been resolved, and I don't see it being resolved for quite a long time. I don't think there's a silver bullet that anybody could find as a legislator that's going to lower healthcare costs, overnight. Our industry is very complicated, as you know, and there are a lot of reasons why certain things are the way they are. I definitely don't want to come on here. I mean, I come on here and I say a lot about pharmacy benefit managers need to be regulated. I mean, that's one major piece that has to happen in order to try to get this stuff under control as far as costs go. But let's talk about a couple of things that have happened recently in Congress and then in the private sector, and we can just kind of get a good sense of where we are and where we could possibly go. So A little while back, everybody talked about the Build Back Better program and how that was on everybody's lips. And oh my God, what is this going to mean? And there's so much stuff in here. Nobody really knows what it is, other than, once this is done, we can just talk about all the good things that are in the bill. When it comes to cancer care, and not just cancer care, I guess when it comes to lowering healthcare costs overall, the fallback has been to let Medicare negotiate drug prices. And in the Build Back Better plan that had a lot of ads, especially in the oncology community, aimed squarely at the Build Back Better plan, it was because of the ASP plus six metric. And because that's where all the specialty stuff lies, including oncology, with this whole complicated sequester a couple of years ago, it went they cut the percentage down and then they put it back because of COVID. But they were trying to mess with that ASP plus six metric again. And when you're dealing with the overhead cost, the ancillary services, the cost of operations for oncology services, that's really not going to fly, because how are they supposed to operate and care for the patient if they're getting less money? And they're already to the bare bones because, like I mentioned before, pharmacy benefit managers just are not reimbursing the drugs like they used to. And there's all kinds of reasons for that that we're not going to get into because we just don't have the time for that. So that's the first thing. I think the second thing that's big that's still viable is HR3. And everyone has kind of mentioned throughout time the Elijah Cummings Lower Drug Costs Now Act, otherwise known as HR3. So what does HR3 do? Well, specifically, it calls for HHS to negotiate maximum prices for single source brand name drugs that lack certain generics and that are among either 125 drugs that account for the greatest national spending or the 125 drugs that account for the greatest Medicare spending. Point two of three is that HHS must negotiate prices for at least 25 of these drugs for 2024, and of at least 50 such drugs thereafter must also negotiate prices for certain newly approved drugs and for insulin products. And lastly, under HR3, the negotiated maximum price must not exceed 120% of the average price in Australia, Canada, France, Germany, Japan, and the United Kingdom. Or two, if such information isn't available, 85% of the US average manufacturer price. Now, what's interesting about this sliding scale is we've seen this before with biologics, and they were trying to lower drugs that were within Part B. We've seen this through Senator Sanders has introduced legislation like this in the past, and we've seen the Trump administration try to introduce like a sliding scale before. Neither proposal got anywhere. So it's just a very complicated thing as far as what's the right metric that we should be benchmarking things on. We've also seen in the past, and we haven't seen it come back because I think it was just such a disaster. The MedPAC call for the oncology care model, that went nowhere. And again, it was talking about maybe let's try to do something with this ASP plus six and give oncologists a flat fee. And that just was not very consistent at all. In the private sector, which are still things that we see now, bundled payments, ACOs, lots of pilot programs in place, like using wearables or apps to lower drug costs. So you'll find a lot of pilots through UnitedHealth. That's where I think a lot of people just automatically look for it because things like that live there. We've also seen insulin come under fresh fire again. We've seen that in the State of the Union address. But it just doesn't seem like government has found the magic answer as far as regulating the price of drugs without becoming a total market interferer. Because this whole thing about free market economics, like how do you balance that? So I don't know if we're any closer to getting this resolved or not. I think we may see pieces, like you may see like an insulin cap on some prices or something, and maybe we'll kind of see how that goes. But As far as the negotiating part, I just don't see that happening.
The Cancer Moonshot program also wants to strengthen preventive efforts and screening rates, which are particularly important after the COVID-19 pandemic, when screening rates dropped sharply. How can policies or legislation impact these more on-the-ground issues that are really about getting individuals to go visit their providers?
There's a lot of things with the screening. Underserved communities, you know, how do you get to them, number one? How do they pay for cancer screenings? There's just a lot of questions, I think. Also, this care at home, it totally makes sense. I think that a lot more payers and people are starting to listen to that. I think we have a very outdated model about we should get everything at the hospital and everything should come through an IV. I get it, but modern medicine is moving away from that. And, you know, as things move away and technologies become a lot easier and cheaper to use, unfortunately, the law takes a while to catch up. There's two examples that I wanted to talk about today. There's tons of oncology-related bills in Congress right now. If you look at one, the Cancer Drug Parity Act of 2021, I think this is a good one to just kind of talk about the overall trend to lower cost. And it seems like a no-brainer. This bill actually requires a group health plan to provide for cost sharing for oral anti-cancer drugs. And in doing that, it's got to make sure that the terms are no less favorable than if there was cost sharing provided by the actual healthcare provider in the office. So you're taking a pill that potentially has less side effects than, you know, you getting all that stuff, harsh things that you would get in a hospital. You know, and it's cheaper. I mean, and the patient would much rather be at home. Why not look at that? That doesn't make a lot of sense. I know that there's been a state trend. Several states have adopted oral cancer drug parity. That's what we're calling it, just to pay the exact same as you would, you know, if you were getting it in the hospital. The other bill that I want to talk about today is the Cancer Care Planning and Communications Act. That seeks to provide for coverage of cancer care planning and coordination under Medicare, and it makes it so that the patient is actually engaged rather than it being told to the patient, this is what you're going to do. And there's just not a lot of coordination of care out there to lower costs. So you're having the patient just make these decisions, either the patient or the caregiver, and they just feel completely lost. You know, so I think that if we educated them a lot more on one, you know, what's effective, and two, just save them time and everything so they don't get stressed out, that's going to lower costs too. So maybe if we just started there, because this is one of those things where you just can't eat an elephant all in one bite. Got to take, you know, if you're in elephants, I mean, maybe we should use a better example, but you know what I mean? It's just the example of it. It's just such a big problem. You got to take it, but the bites have to be effective. And they have to be targeted.
Are there other key parts of the program that you want to touch on, or do you have any final thoughts?
I think the moonshot is going to be an umbrella to what we're seeing in the private sector now. And I think actually having that leadership and funding directives and things like that are going to hopefully make things a lot easier to come to market. There's the Cures Act too, that's being discussed right now about, hey, Cures Act 1 kind of touched on innovative medicines and how do we cut the red tape to get where we need to go. So let's take a part 2 to that, so that's good. But if we're looking actually at what the moonshot does, it does several good things. So one, it diagnoses, they're looking for ways to diagnose cancer a lot sooner through blood tests, which are things that we didn't have a couple of years ago. Second, it uses the mRNA technology. And when we hear about mRNA, we hear about COVID. And, you know, a lot of that stuff was very effective when you look at people that have vaccines now versus where we were in 2020. So that's something the moonshot is encouraging. It also talks a lot about the environmental factors, especially when it comes to underserved communities. So working on getting clean water to different places. I mean, we've seen in the national debate about Flint, Michigan, and some of these other places with lead pipes, and how a lot of that stuff, environmental things, lead to cancers. It's just the way that it is, and trying to clean up a lot of the pollution. So I think that that's going to be good because, you know, going to an underserved community, it's underserved. It doesn't have the physician resources. It just doesn't have the stuff that other communities may have. So if we target that, we're definitely going to lower costs. So I think that's good leadership on the Moonshots initiative there. It also talks about targeting treatments for precision medicine and genomics and immunotherapies. And these are things that seem very space-agey, but now they're becoming, to the forefront where people are talking about them. It's just a matter of how do the payers pay for them? And how does specialty pharmacy utilize these technologies, you know, as part of the day-to-day and educate the patients about it? Also, accelerating clinical trials for cancer, childhood cancers too, is another thing that I think that they hit on. That's just something that we don't talk a lot about. It just kind of gets grouped all in there. And I think it's just because there's so many different types of cancers, unfortunately. So I think just having this umbrella of, okay, here's the information. These are the types of cancers that, you know, are afflicting our country. And here are the costs. And you know, we're encouraging this technology. You know, if we have a private market answer, let's try to get it to as many hands as possible in order to get to that goal of reducing, 50% of cancer care by, in the next 25 years. So these are the things to get that done.
Thanks for listening to Pharmacy Focus Oncology Edition. Tune in next month to learn more about what pharmacists need to know in the oncology space.